Welcome to The Weekly Transit, a podcast exploring the intersection of Western astrology and Jungian psychology. Astrology is a language that communicates how the planets and stars influence life on Earth, while psychology helps us navigate both conscious and unconscious experiences. Together, these tools offer the potential for self-understanding, growth, and transformation. Join astrologer Scott Tajarian and me, psychotherapist Gabriella D'Urso, as we dive into the cosmic forecast each week.
Welcome to the Weekly Transit. In this week's episode, we are going to discuss seven transits for the week of December 11th through the 17th. First transit we're going to discuss is Mercury in Capricorn sextile, Venus in Scorpio. The second is the new moon in Sagittarius, which is one of the big highlights of the week. We're also going to discuss Mercury retrograde, another big highlight this week. The sun in Sagittarius trine the north node retrograde in Aries. Mars in Sagittarius trine Chiron retrograde in Aries. The sun in Sagittarius square Neptune in Pisces. And finally, Mercury retrograde in Capricorn trine Jupiter retrograde in Capricorn, which is actually a transit that we discussed last week, but now with the Mercury retrograde, it's going to start going back and realigning with planets that it has recently aligned with in the previous weeks. So of course, we're going to highlight each one of these. We're going to let you know the dates and the days that these energies will most strongly be affecting you. We will include links in the show notes if you want to jump to any one of these particular transits or dates. So the week begins, Gabriella, with Mercury in Capricorn, sextile Venus in Scorpio. The dates that this is impacting us most strongly is December 10th through the 12th. That was Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. So Monday, Tuesday of this week, Sunday of last week. We covered this in the last episode, but I feel like it's important to touch on some of the transits that maybe we spoke about last week because they're still influencing us this week. This is where we left off last week. This is where we're beginning this week. So Mercury is the messenger of the gods, guide of souls to the underworld, the planet of consciousness, communication, and coordination. It's transiting through Capricorn, the cardinal earth sign symbolized by the goat and ruled by Saturn, the planet of responsibility, forming a sextile, which is a positive aspect with Venus, Lady Luck, the goddess of love and beauty, the planet of relationships, in the fixed water sign symbolized by the scorpion, Scorpio.
So this is more opportunities to communicate in relationships from a place of authority.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's it. So yes, one of the big themes of the week is that authority piece. The theme of this transit is communication with authority in your deepest bonds. So you think about the people that you're most intimate with, the people that you share energy with, whether it's secrets, sex, money, however you engage with others in a way that causes you to feel vulnerable, these are the relationships that we're talking about. So how do you communicate in those relationships with somebody that you are deeply connected to? You don't want to upset them. You don't want to hurt their feelings in some way. How do you communicate from a place of authority while also still showing them respect and listening to them from as an authority? I guess the respect comes from listening to them from that place of authority. If you're in a position of power and the position of power is your self-awareness, then if you're secure in yourself, then you have the ability to listen to others.
I also think the clearer you are on your own experience, what you want to communicate and where that's coming from for you, the clearer it will be for the person on the receiving end.
Yes.
One of the tools that I love to use in therapy is called nonviolent communication. And it's essentially a process of speaking with authority from, really, first and foremost, we are authorities on ourselves and our experiences. So nonviolent communication, if you're not familiar with it, is a process of first you identify the feeling that's coming up for you. What is the need behind that feeling? And then you practice communicating how to make a request to have your needs met. So it's a really simple, it sounds like a simple process. And once you get used to learning how to identify the feeling, the need, and the request. So I wonder if that's part of what this could be identifying. Part of where we get into trouble with communication with others is when we try to tell them how they're feeling. But when you own how you're feeling first, you're also modeling the kind of communication that you'd like to have with the other person. And then nonviolent communication is also about giving an example too. So for example, Scott, when you leave the toilet seat up, this is a fictional example, of course.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I've been trained by Gabriella to, and not even Gabriella, because I wasn't trained by, I was trained by my mom and sister.
Well, this is of course.
I shared a bathroom with my sister for however many years we lived together.
Yeah, this is just an example.
Okay, yes.
So, Scott, when you leave the toilet seat up, I feel angry because I need to feel like this is also my house and my space. And when you do that, I feel like I feel angry because I don't feel like it's my space. So would you be willing to put the toilet seat down to help meet that need of mine in our home?
And so the flip side of that, the violent communication would be, stop fucking leaving the toilet seat up. Like screaming from across the house?
Sure. Well, and I should just clarify that the reason it's called nonviolent communication is, I guess, because it acknowledges the way that words can feel violent to another person. It doesn't mean that you have to be screaming at someone for something to feel violent. But when you're telling someone, like, I guess an alternative to that would be, you feel so superior to me, and that's why you are leaving the toilet seat up. You're trying to control me.
This is attacking.
This is the patriarchy. You know, this is this and that. It's sort of, I'm not, in that example, I'm not speaking from my own feelings. So you don't have a chance to really understand what's happening for me.
So nonviolent communication is really speaking from your own experience. And you're not attacking someone else over what you're feeling. You're just sharing your feelings with them, your perspective, your position of authority, and how maybe the actions of the other person have infringed upon your feeling of value or authority.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I will say that identifying what it is you're feeling is not always as easy as it sounds. And then identifying, you know, a big piece of this is identifying what your needs are behind the feeling. What is the need that is not met that is bringing up that feeling is a big piece. And then when you're making a request, you're also, I think that's an act of authority because you're giving an example of what the other person can do to help you have that need met. You're not putting it on, you're not just complaining. Like there's actually, you're proposing a resolution versus if you're simply expressing frustration with someone, you're actually really putting it on them to find the solution. You know, and ideally this goes back and forth and maybe you meet in the middle when both people are using this particular technique, there's an opportunity to sort of go back and forth on what the request might be. You know, you might come back to me and say, well, I also have a request for you around the bathroom or the kitchen or whatever shared living space, you might have feelings and needs that are not being met. Mm-hmm. And you might have requests for me. So it also opens up an opportunity for dialogue to be just healthier and more communicative in general.
Open, back and forth.
Open.
Yes.
However you approach someone is likely how they're going to respond to you.
Well, this is great insight in really into how the energy is setting up for the week, because we start with this transit, which kind of starts to dissipate on Tuesday the 12th. And on Tuesday the 12th is when the new moon in Sagittarius is. So when you think about Sagittarius, it's about speaking your truth. So if you're in that sort of nonviolent communication frequency, it's like you have to be open to hearing what the other person has to say about what you have to say. Right? Is that what you're saying?
You do. I mean, when you're using this technique, you're approaching communication inherently from a vulnerable place because you're leading with your feelings, which is really connecting us into that Scorpio energy.
Yes.
That's, you're kind of showing your, you know, your underbelly, like you're showing your softness. You know, in a, when you're communicating someone, if they lead with, "Hey, I'm feeling really sad." That's really different than leading with an accusation or an assumption or something that feels really guarded and defensive. So you're really leading with the most vulnerable part of what it is you're going to share.
Yes.
So it's a practice. It takes time to start orienting towards that kind of communication, especially identifying feelings. Oftentimes we are confusing other things with feelings.
What do you mean?
Well, I hear this sentence a lot. "I feel like you don't care about me." And that's not actually a feeling. I feel sad, sadness, anger, joy. Those are feelings. So sometimes we think we're expressing a feeling, but what we're actually not.
So the appropriate thing, if you're thinking that "I feel like you don't care about me,"
it's a thought, not a feeling.
It's a thought, not a feeling. And the feeling would actually be, "I'm feeling lonely. I feel like I don't feel cared for."
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And how different is that to receive? You know, when I say, "I feel like you don't care about me," you know, that's likely going to be met with it with something defensive versus, "I feel really sad because I need to feel like you care about me in this relationship and this behavior. You left the toilet seat up. It makes me feel sad because I don't know that you care about what it is that I need." So if anyone's interested, there's a book called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, and he originally developed this program working with incarcerated men. He went to prisons and taught about nonviolent communication, which is probably where it really got its title, because he was dealing with individuals who had violent histories and were therefore communicating more violently than probably the average person who's upset about a toilet seat, for example. But when you really tune in to sort of the way that communication can be violent, even in everyday experience, I think it's a great name for that kind of work.
For sure.
Yeah. And I highly recommend that book if anyone's resonating with this idea.
Awesome. Thank you. So the next transit that we're going to be talking about is the new moon in Sagittarius. The new moon is planting the seeds of the coming harvest. It's the inhale. The full moon is the exhale. The new moon is when the moon catches up to the sun in the zodiac and passes the sun. During the new moon, I like to think of myself as a farmer, and a farmer needs to know three things in order to be a decent farmer. You need to understand the seed, you need to understand the soil, and you need to understand the climate. The seed is the sign where the new moon is occurring. So the seed for this new moon is Sagittarius. The soil and the climate, that's something you learn in the moon cycle classes that I teach, where the soil would be the house where the new moon is occurring in your astrological code, and the climate is the planets or key points within your astrological code that are aligning with the new moon. So for now, we'll look at the seed. And so when you're thinking about Sagittarius, it's mutable, adaptable, changeable, go with the flow. It's the end of the season, the end of fall in the northern hemisphere, the end of spring in the southern hemisphere. It's fire. Fire is more extroverted than introverted, because fire is something that can touch you, but it's not something that you can touch. Fire can warm a room on a cold winter's night, or it can burn down the house. It's all how you're working with the energy. The planetary ruler of Sagittarius is Jupiter. Jupiter is the god of thunder, lord of justice, the planet of luck and expansion. The symbol for Sagittarius is the archer. The archer is Katniss Everdeen, Robin Hood, freedom-loving individuals that don't want anyone to tell them where to go, how to think, what to say, what to do. They know the difference between right or wrong, and they want the freedom to explore far and wide so they can expand their minds, deepen their philosophical view, and speak their truth. Recently, Gabriella mentioned to me how she always hears me mention Katniss Everdeen, and who is that? And so it took me years
years to ask you, who is that person that you're always talking about?
So we watched recently the four Hunger Games films, and
very stressful movies, by the way.
Yes. It's so fascinating because, you know, Jennifer Lawrence, who plays Katniss Everdeen, is a Sagittarius rising. So she was born with Sagittarius in her primal triad. Throughout the films, she's got the bow and arrow. And not only that symbol of the bow and arrow, but also the energy of her character. When you get to those later films of the Hunger Games, I think it's like the third one where they want to use Katniss as like a symbol of the rebellion's propaganda. And they try to get her to read a script and share whatever they want her to share.
And they're trying to control her.
Yes. And yeah. it's like bad acting. You know, she can't do it. She can't do it. And it's great acting by Jennifer Lawrence, because she plays a bad actor as well as she is a natural actor. So, because she's just like reading the script and it's not landing. And the Woody Harrelson character, who's like her mentor, he's the mentor character of the film series. He tells the rebel leaders, look, you can't tell Katniss what to say. You have to like let her just say her own thing. And so they take her out into the war zone, and she visits a hospital, and all the patients in the hospital are inspired to see her, and she's inspired by them, and that opens her up to just, she has something to say now. And they record her saying what she says. And at that point, you're just like, oh my God, it's so exciting. Because it's so passionate, the way that she is sharing her truth. And so Sagittarius is a spiritual sign. It's a sign that connects us to the higher power. It's about channeling in. And so when Katniss is inspiring the rebel forces. She is channeling something. Mm-hmm. She is like somewhat unconscious. It's just like it's a feeling that's coming up in her, and she's just expressing her truth.
And it's that experience of freedom that allows the channel to come through.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so exactly. Yes.
If anyone's unfamiliar with channeling, or maybe this would be an interesting moment to clarify, it is this information coming from outside of you, moving through you, mm-hmm. and being expressed through you, but it's not of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's also what Reiki is, is a process of channeling.
Yes.
And so you do have to go into a state of surrender in order to allow something to move through you.
Totally.
And to your point, it's the opportunity of feeling free, mm-hmm. that allows you to have the spaciousness for something to come through.
There's so many examples of channeling. Like, I think of Jimi Hendrix, who is a Sagittarius rising, Sagittarius sun. When you see him play guitar,
something's just moving through him.
It's an out-of-body experience. He's not there, you know? Like, something is clearly channeling through him. Like, you mm-hmm. see him playing, and his eyes are closed, his mouth is open, the guitar's, you know, behind his back, and he's just like, how does anyone, you know, he's possessed. And, you know, one of his songs, he has a song called Freedom, which is a theme word of Sagittarius. Another example of Sagittarius is like Bruce Lee. He's a Sagittarius sun and rising as well. And when he was doing the martial arts, it was like an out-of-body experience. Like, how does somebody move like that? And when you hear Bruce Lee speak, and when you hear Jimi Hendrix speak, they both identify themselves as philosophers. As spiritual men.
Absolutely.
You know, and that is also Sagittarius. I also think of like Michael Jordan. He is a Sagittarius moon. And when he would play basketball and he'd stick out his tongue, he's like, I don't even know that I'm doing that. But he's like having an out-of-body experience playing this game, and it's like otherworldly.
Well, I was just thinking as you were talking about how two of my most intuitive friends are Sagittarius moon, one of which I know listens to this podcast. Hi, Stacy.
Ah, Stacy.
Stacy. And I wonder how much of that is due to that moon placement versus, you know, the rest of the chart.
The spiritual connection?
The experience of being able to channel.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's a big part of it.
I think so too. And it's sort of landing for me now that maybe I hadn't attributed that to Sagittarius.
Yes. It's a channel. I mean, I think of like Elvis Presley is another example. Like, he's a Sagittarius rising. And Elvis embodies Sagittarius in a couple of different ways. Number one, what is Elvis known for? Shaking his hips. And Sagittarius rules what? The hips. The hips signify movement. If your hips aren't working, you can't move forward. You need the hips in order to move forward. And the first time Elvis was on stage singing and playing guitar, he started moving his hips. And after the show, like the club promoter or wherever he was performing came up to him and was like, wow, that was really great. The audience really loved you. They were going crazy when you were shaking your hips. And he was like, what? I was? He didn't even know. Because, you know, the ascendant is what you show around people you don't know, in situations where you're uncomfortable, in places where you're unfamiliar. So he was uncomfortable on stage, And it was like a nervous tic shaking his hips.
That's so interesting.
And Elvis is also known for expanding that waistline and his indulgence in terms of food and substances and spending money, jewels, the bling, buying everyone a Cadillac. That's sort of the shadow side of Sagittarius, which can be indulgent. I also think of Thor. Thor is the old Norse god that is the equivalent to Jupiter. Thor is the god of thunder. Jupiter is the god of thunder. Thor carries the hammer of the gods that looks like a gavel. Jupiter is Lord of Justice. So Thor carries the hammer of the gods. He is allowed to carry the hammer of the gods because the gods have deemed Thor as having a high sense of ethics. They know that he will wield that power in a way that is righteous. Not anyone can hold the hammer of the gods. Only Thor can. But in Thor's shadow side, if you watch these Marvel movies, and I'm not sure which one it is because there's so many of them, but through the series of Thor, Chris Hemsworth is playing Thor. And in some of the later versions of that character, he's like disillusioned, which is another sort of Sagittarius shadow side thing. Like Sagittarius is so optimistic. It's like, everything's going to be amazing. This is great. And there's so much humor and jovialness to Sagittarius because it's all about the truth. And those Sagittarius will say things that other people are thinking but are afraid to say.
Right.
And that's what makes them so hilarious. So many great Sagittarius comedians. But Chris Hemsworth is on the shadow side here in this role one period of him playing Thor, where he's very disillusioned, which is the opposite of optimism. He is taking that disillusionment and using it to give himself permission to indulge himself. And he is eating to the point of gluttony and drinking, and he's putting on a lot of weight like Elvis did. And so that is the shadow side of this season, of Sagittarius season, is as we're setting our intentions to speak our truth, to be honest and forthright and live a life of adventure and exploration, live from a code of ethics that is righteous, to also refrain from being indulgent, extravagant, getting lost in that sort of disillusionment that when our big idea doesn't come through, it's like the end of the world.
Yes, and also knowing that there can be value in being with the shadow.
Oh, yes.
Or touching the shadow.
Of course.
Well, I'm just thinking about the symbolism of the bow and arrow and how I think when you're pulling back the arrow and you're aiming, like that really represents that optimism and those big dreams and those goals, and you're going up, 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 you know, you're following the trajectory of that arrow, but the arrow doesn't always make contact with whatever that dream is or that whatever the vision is that's connected to the optimistic feeling. And sometimes it dives back down and it lands back on Earth. And that is represented by that disillusionment.
Yes.
It's been up and it's been on this journey. That arrow, the trajectory of that arrow, it's symbolic of that cycle of optimism and disillusionment.
Yes.
And I guess I might disagree with you a bit in the sense that I think that part of that cycle is necessary. So not that we're supposed to avoid the disillusionment, but that it's meant to help us understand the cyclical nature
of life. Yeah. Yes.
And I think, you know, this is a controversial topic, I think, in the field of mental health, because we really pathologize anybody who experiences cycles, emotional cycles. So like an example might be like a bipolar disorder is a really extreme example of someone living between two cycles, a high and a low. So there are times when living in cycles is certainly problematic when it becomes too extreme, but there is a healthy way to live with cycles. Mm-hmm. And I think women are naturally attuned to this because of the menstrual cycle. We understand that there is a certain amount of normalcy to that. It's built into our bodies. Mm-hmm. But I think we've lost touch with that on a larger scale, that living in cycles, living with nature, attuning to the seasons is something that is healing for us, mm-hmm, and supports us in our own evolution.
So what would you think about someone like Elvis? Because he was deep in the shadow, mm-hmm, when he passed away. And, you know, I watched that movie that came out about him recently, and it was really sad because Elvis, part of the Sagittarius experience is traveling, exploring foreign cultures, foreign lands. And his manager like regulated him to Las Vegas. Like, you're making so much money in Las Vegas, this is where you need to be. And wouldn't let him get on a plane, mm-hmm, to go to Europe. Like, he wanted to travel to Europe and Asia and go all these different places and tour there, but he never did.
Oh, that makes me really sad.
And so maybe that's why he was so deep in his shadow of indulgence, mm-hmm, because his optimism was constantly
thwarted.
Yes.
Well, yeah, it's like he was told he had to stand there with the bow and arrow. Mm-hmm. It's like the arrow was pulled back and he wasn't allowed to launch it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of the example you gave with Katniss Everdeen, mm-hmm, where her speech was restricted and she was given a script.
Right.
And that's sort of what happened to Elvis on a larger scale.
Yes.
I think that could absolutely contribute to him indulging in the shadow side. Mm-hmm. So rather than just letting it be a part of the cycle, it became a really dominant part of his experience because he wasn't allowed to really have the full cycle.
So you think that's what, I mean, I know you don't want to generalize, but just thinking like it's important to experience the shadow and the light. Mm-hmm. But if you're not able to experience the light, then you get stuck in the shadow. Or some people try to stay in the light all the time, and then something happens to them.
And we know that's not possible either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like another example of this too is the guy who just won the Oscar last year, I think, Brendan Fraser. For that film that he...
Oh, The Whale.
The Whale.
The Whale.
The Whale. Yes.
Yes. I had a hard time with that movie.
He's also a Sagittarius son. He's a Sagittarius son. And
he played a character who was incredibly indulgent with food.
Exactly.
That's so interesting.
And what's also interesting is I used to work at a restaurant where he was kind of a regular, and he would come in by himself. It was a Korean barbecue restaurant, and he would come in and eat like for four people. And he's a big dude, you know, so I mean, he can put down a lot, but he would just eat a lot and drink a lot, and it was very kind of Sagittarius, I guess.
I think it's interesting how he chose a role
in
a movie where he could really explore that shadow side without necessarily having to live it in his waking life.
That's what I see with so many celebrities, like even Katniss Everdeen. She's playing an archer. Mm-hmm. You know, Brendan Fraser, I read an article, an interview about him a couple years before The Whale. And the interviewer said that in the middle of the interview, he got up from the chair, went outside onto the deck, pulled out a bow and arrow, and just fired an arrow across his backyard. And then came back and continued the interview.
Like it was as casual as getting a glass of water?
Exactly, yeah.
Wow. You can't make this stuff up.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, this is all the energy of the new moon. So think about, is there something that, like, you know, especially for those that have key astrological points or planets in Virgo or Pisces, which are the two signs that square Sagittarius, you know, the way that Sagittarius makes Virgo and Pisces uncomfortable is, you know, Virgo's all about the details, the nuances, and Sagittarius is the big picture. Pisces is about compassion and empathy, and Sagittarius is just all about the truth. And so it's sometimes hard to tell people the truth while also being empathetic and compassionate. So yeah. For those that have key points or planets in Pisces or Virgo, this is maybe an invitation for you to step into that shadow side of Sagittarius and be blunt and be extravagant, you know, loosen up if you're a Virgo and don't be so sensitive if you're a Pisces, so to speak.
Well, and oftentimes the qualities that we dislike in another person are qualities that we have suppressed in ourselves and we want a chance to express it, to do it.
So this is your chance.
Yeah, so try it on.
Exactly.
See how it feels.
Exactly. If you have key
points. And I bet you like it.
Yes, exactly. So the bottom line for this Sagittarius new moon is to set your intentions to be honest, to be truthful to yourself, to those around you. You got to be true to yourself before you're true to anyone else.
Absolutely.
And to set your intentions to live a life of adventure and exploration, expand your horizons, and be willing to listen to the truth of others as well. Because that's another shadow side of Sagittarius.
Yes, that the concept that my truth is the only truth.
Exactly.
Well, and then if you know what house the new moon is in, that can help you identify
where the truth.
Where is the truth being uncovered for you?
Yes.
Is it in your home life? Is it in your career? Is it in intimate relationships? Is it in your house of money?
Yes.
Is it around communication? Community?
Yes.
So many opportunities that could be different depending on what the house is. So that's
totally
an important piece, right?
Exactly, exactly. Where do you need to be most truthful, or where do you need to be directing your truth, or where do you need to be expanding your philosophical view? That's like the sign is what and the house is where. The sign is what is the energy that is coloring the planet, and the house is where that energy is being directed. Yes. I just have one more point with the Sagittarius new moon is, you know, Sagittarius is the sign that rules religion. And on the light side, it's two people that have completely different religious views, and they're having a philosophical discussion about their spiritual or religious beliefs. The shadow side of that is two people causing harm to one another or discounting the other's beliefs because they're not in alignment with my beliefs. So that's something else to think about with the Sagittarius energy.
That it's allowing yourself freedom of expression, but also allowing the other party freedom of expression
too. And that's where we bring into this next piece here, which the third transit is Mercury retrograde.
I started feeling this creeping in.
Yeah.
A couple days ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In the retrograde shadow right now. So
yep.
As we move through the retrograde shadow into Mercury retrograde, which begins right on the heels of the new moon on Tuesday, Wednesday, it's December 12th, 13th, right around then is when the retrograde begins. I think it happens like right at midnight. On the 12th going into the 13th Pacific time. And by the way, the new moon in Sagittarius is at 3:33 p.m. Pacific time.
Okay.
So, but Mercury retrograde stopped in the sky, not moving anywhere, gonna move backwards. That's creating challenges with communication and specifically challenges with regards to communicating from your position of authority as Mercury's transiting through Capricorn, which is the sign of authority.
But just to clarify, Mercury mm-hmm. doesn't actually move backwards.
No, not right? in reality, but from our perspective, it does.
From our perspective.
Yes.
It's an illusion of moving backwards.
Yes.
But it does slow down.
From our perspective, it slows down.
But Mercury it doesn't never... slow down no. in reality?
No.
How does that happen?
It takes Mercury 88 days to orbit the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It takes the Earth 365 days to orbit the sun. Since Mercury is orbiting the sun so much quicker than the Earth, there's times where it would be on the other side of the sun from the Earth.
Right, where we can't see it.
Yes. But that is not possible from where we are. It looks like it's moving backwards, or it looks like it's slowing down. It's not, but it is from our perspective. It's like, for instance, if you've ever seen a wheel spin so fast that it looks like it slows down and starts moving the other direction.
Mm-hmm. So it's an optical illusion.
It's an optical illusion.
Not that we can see it from right. with the naked eye, but that's so interesting.
Yes. There's some sort of scientific term, I'm not sure what it is, that talks about, you know, if something is spinning so fast mm-hmm. and then it reaches a certain point of revolution where it's, to the naked eye, it looks like it's moving backwards. Hmm. That's what happens with these retrograde planets. It's that no planet is actually moving backwards. That doesn't happen if you're out right. in space. But mm-hmm. from our perspective, it does look like it's moving backwards.
Well, and isn't that fascinating? Not to take us down a philosophical rabbit hole, but this concept of your perception is your reality
mm-hmm.
really applies here because we're perceiving that Mercury is changing its patterns.
Yes.
And it is from our perspective, yes. but it also is not in totality.
Right. But it is affecting our reality.
But it's affecting our reality.
Yes.
This is just a really interesting example of that.
Yes.
Because so often that perspective of like your thoughts and perceptions create your reality gets sort of shot down
mm-hmm.
as sort of a woo-woo, you know, idea.
Yes.
But this is a great example. Because so many people that I know of who don't necessarily really participate in, you know, learning about astrology and such, definitely feel Mercury retrograde.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I used to work in a corporate job, people, like anytime something would happen with like the company printer or, you know, something happened with like technology, computers, whatever, they would come over and ask me if it was Mercury retrograde. You know, they would want an answer for
yes.
it. And usually
it was. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's so funny.
From a from a psychological perspective, like, do you have any sort of recommendations on how to navigate the planet of the conscious mind from our perspective moving backwards?
Sure. I would say not to fight what's coming up for you. Mm-hmm. Mercury retrograde is about revisiting the past. I think of it as like if you're driving through a neighborhood, you're in your car, mm-hmm. and you stop and reverse.
Yes.
And then drive through that section again. I think to the best of your ability, not to be frustrated by that experience, mm-hmm. but really to be mindful about what it is you're meant to be revisiting. So to use the energy to work for you rather than to work against you, because it can be a really frustrating time. There are delays, you know, but there's always, from my perspective, there's a reason why there might be delays. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're scheduled to go on a trip and your flight gets canceled, you really don't know really why that happened, but you can lean into the way that you're being directed. Mm-hmm. What is it you're meant to revisit? What are you meant to remember? And how can you make the most of it? Because the more you learn the lesson that is right in front of you, the quicker you're able to get through that discomfort.
Yes.
So I would say facing the discomfort rather than running from it, mm-hmm. which is easier said than done.
Of course.
But I know a big part of Mercury retrograde can be like people from your past coming into your life again.
Right.
Right?
Totally. Yes.
Like this happens a lot with like, you know, people from maybe past romantic relationships, mm-hmm. and that can be really unsettling.
Yep.
And upsetting. Mm-hmm. But what is it that you need to revisit with that person to fully let that go?
Yes. And even if it's like a new relationship that you're kind of kindling during Mercury retrograde, it might not last beyond the retrograde or the retrograde shadow, but the purpose of that interaction is maybe you revisiting some of those past patterns that you've cultivated through your previous relationships.
Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes these themes come back. It's like that expression, like one more time with feeling. So you can like really let go of it.
Yes, yes. I love it. So, and this retrograde feels really big to me because...
How so?
Well, because it's starting on the new moon and it ends on New Year's Day.
Wow.
And then it moves out of its retrograde shadow on January 20th, the same day that the Sun and Pluto transit into Aquarius. Mm. So Mercury, where it is right now today on December 12th, December 13th, is exactly where Mercury will be on January 20th at 8 degrees in Capricorn. So, and there's this sort of synastry between Sagittarius and Aquarius, and then there's Capricorn is in between. It's like they both share a border with Capricorn. Mm-hmm. It goes Sagittarius, Capricorn, and then Aquarius. But Sagittarius is freedom. Aquarius is independence. Independence comes with greater responsibility than freedom. You know, when you're a child, you're free. You're running around. You're doing whatever you want to do and whoever's taking care of you. Whereas independence, oh, you want to be independent. Okay, well, that means that you can pay your own bills and you can feed yourself and clothe yourself and all those sorts of things. Because if you're independent, then that means that you're not dependent on me, the Father. So Sagittarius is like that Burning Man energy, that sort of bohemian. We don't need any money. We're just living free and sharing our gifts. Mm-hmm. Whereas Aquarius comes with some responsibility. So you have those two energies that are bookending this Mercury transit. Mm-hmm. So think about how you're speaking as an authority right now and where you want to be by January 20th. Hmm. Where do you want to be by January 20th? How will you have grown as a communicator in your ability to articulate your perspective? Mm-hmm.
So there'll be some sort of invitation that you'll get to explore, but you'll actually end up where you started in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's like we're going to be back where we are right now.
Hmm.
So it's like going back to your childhood home.
Hmm.
You're like, I'm here again. I recognize it, but it's different.
I did that the other day, not my childhood home, but I drove back through and looked at the old house, the first place I ever lived when I moved to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked really different.
Yes.
And it was really unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
It looked so small.
Hmm. And how'd that make you feel?
It was, I guess I had a moment of kind of questioning my memories. Mm-hmm. Sometimes our memories are not always accurate. Right?
Yes.
Because, of course, the size of the house hasn't changed.
Uh-huh.
And I've gotten older, but I'm pretty much, you know, like the physicality of myself and the house have not changed.
Uh-huh.
So I had this moment of, yeah, questioning the accuracy of my memory.
What was off? It just...
So when I moved here, you know, I moved from Philadelphia and I remember driving with the moving truck up these windy roads of Mount Washington is where I lived when I mm-hmm. first arrived here. And it just felt so grand. It felt expansive and this huge house and
in the hills.
And that's what it was for me. So I know that, you know, there's a part of it that is accurate because like the felt sense for me, I can still feel into that in mm-hmm. this moment, but the reality somehow was not matching.
Mm-hmm.
Matching with the memory.
You've changed a lot since then.
I have. And I guess I just, yeah, had a moment of questioning, not that either of them has to be right or wrong, but my perception has changed now mm-hmm. of this house
mm-hmm.
and therefore my reality has changed.
Yes.
And I do, you know, I've been in LA now almost 10 years, which is crazy to say. And I go back there probably every couple years, I would say, and mm-hmm. drive through. And every time I drive through, I think to myself, well, that's probably the last time I ever need to do that. And then I always find myself, you know, maybe a couple years later in the neighborhood. I have a friend who lives in the area. Well, I think I'll just drive up. It's kind of, there's something very Mercury retrograde about it.
Yes.
Like where you think you're done with a cycle or an experience,
mm-hmm.
but then you aren't.
Mm-hmm.
There's another layer. There's something else to be learned.
Yes.
Yeah.
You felt an urge maybe to connect to your past, to the past you, or to revisit
mm-hmm.
and learn some, like you're seeing things from a different perspective now.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's this one tree on the street that mm-hmm. I used to love. And I have a beautiful photo of a knot in the tree that was the shape of a heart.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I go back, I notice how much it's grown and how I can't see that shape anymore.
The heart's gone
because wow. the tree is now so much bigger. So wow. it's this really kind of trippy experience.
Yes. This is all the Sagittarius energy right mm-hmm. now where we're being expanded,
mm-hmm.
but the retrograde is drawing us back somehow. So it's like expansion, retraction
mm-hmm.
at the same time. And so it just feels like there's some serious growth that's going to happen over the next 5 weeks.
I can feel that for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, I mean, we've talked about the birthing process several mm-hmm. times on here, and mm-hmm. I can't help but think of that's what a contraction is.
Mm-hmm.
You're yes. expanded and then you're pulled back.
Yep.
And in the process, you're expanding with the expansion and then you're retracting with it.
Yep.
And eventually that leads to a birthing experience.
Yes.
Where you don't need to be in that space anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But we know, you know, we have our physical birth, but we also have other cycles that we live through that we're repeating in that sense,
mm-hmm.
that we're being birthed into new chapters of ourselves and in our life consistently.
Yes.
And maybe astrologically, that's, you know, there's a connection
always
to that.
There's always expansion retraction happening with mm-hmm. the planets and stars. That's how we grow energetically.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a period of growth. The fourth transit for the week is the sun, the giver of light, life, and vitality, transiting through the mutable fire sign, Sagittarius, which we've been talking about a lot, mm-hmm. forming a supportive trine with the north node, the soul's purpose, in the cardinal fire sign, symbolized by the ram, Aries. So this is occurring from December 13th to the 16th. So that's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Hmm. Right after the new moon, right as Mercury's turning retrograde, we've got that optimism of the new moon. We're setting our intentions to live free, to be adventurous, to live our truth, to speak our truth. Mercury retrograde is maybe holding us back and creating that stagnation or challenges with communication. But we're really being supported here by the sun in Sagittarius, aligning with the north node in Aries. The sun is your identity. It's the battery that powers the human ship. We are all experiencing what it means to be Sagittarius, to be open, optimistic, free-thinking, expressive, spiritual. Connecting to the north node in Aries, the soul's purpose is encouraging us to be confident and authentic in expressing who we are, because we love ourselves. We're feeling the self-love. Hopefully, you know, that's what this transit is about.
There's also an impulsive quality to Aries too, right?
Yes, exactly.
Like a childlike,
yep.
the freedom to be impulsive.
Yeah.
Is maybe coming up.
Yes. Hit first, ask questions later.
Yes.
Don't think, just do. That's Aries.
Yes.
Just do it. You know, that's the Aries energy.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been feeling hesitant in any way, maybe in the early part of the week, by the end of the week, you're going to feel that fire lit under your backside Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That extra motivation. Okay, I'm going to do something. I need to say something. I need to go somewhere. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of energy behind this transit.
You also said this phrase, feeling held back by Mercury retrograde. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking of a way maybe we could reframe that. And we could say, maybe we're invited back.
Invited back. Yes.
Just so it doesn't sound like such a punishment.
You're being punished. It's Mercury retrograde. Everyone's being punished now. It's time to hate life, everyone. This is the shadow side, Gabriella.
I know, but it has such a bad reputation out there.
Yes.
And I'm just...
good. A bad reputation is a good reputation for Mercury retrograde.
No, I want to reframe it. And I think that even in the language we're using, that we can start to do that.
Are you trying to fight the shadow? Are you trying to escape the shadow, Gabriella?
I'm being invited, Scott.
You're being invited?
I'm being invited.
You know I don't mind Mercury retrograde.
Just thought I would introduce...
I'm a big supporter of Mercury retrograde.
I know you are. I just want us to do our part in reframing it with maybe the language. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very well.
Okay.
That's you're speaking your truth. I appreciate that. Thank you for speaking your truth, Gabriella.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, we got a really beautiful review on the podcast the other day.
We did.
And this particular person, I don't know if you're listening right now. I can't remember your name, but this person encouraged me to disagree.
To argue with me.
To disagree with you if I really disagreed with you. And I have to say that that's like the ultimate invitation for me, and some of my work is to, you know, engage with conflict when it comes up. So I'm taking that to heart.
Disagree with me, my love. All good. You're free to disagree with me.
Okay. Okay. We're practicing.
Yes. I love it. Thank you. The fifth transit this week is Mars, the god of war, the planet of action, aggression, and conflict. So we just talked about the Sun and North Node, Sun in Sagittarius, the North Node in Aries. Now we're talking about two other planets in the same signs, Mars in Sagittarius and Chiron, the wound and the ancient wisdom that is unlocked through healing that wound in Aries. So remember last week we were talking about the Sun in Sagittarius aligning with Chiron in Aries. Now Mars is where the Sun was last week, aligning with Chiron. So last week we were talking about how this is the opportunity to face your fears, your insecurities, honestly, openly. Mars in Sagittarius intensifies that energy, not only because Mars is the god of war, the planet of action, aggression, and conflict, but also because Mars is the planetary ruler of Aries, the sign where Chiron is. So maybe last week you're like, okay, I hear that. I'm going to try to face my fears, but then you don't do them. You don't face your insecurities. This week, you're getting that real kick in the pants to do it. Like you are being pushed. It's charging ahead. Like we are now running towards the conflict, Gabriella. Yeah. It's time for you to stand up for yourself with me. As if she never does. Just not on camera. She's got to be sweet on camera. But when the camera's off, oh boy.
Well, I'm wondering if these insecurities, did you say what day are these?
So this is happening kind of concurrently to the Sun's alignment with the North Node. This is happening December 13th through the 17th. Okay. So it's Wednesday to Sunday.
So this is also, I'm just wondering the relationship between your insecurities and are they getting activated by the retrograde process? Mm-hmm. Because often our insecurities, they have roots in the past. And in order to really reconcile with our insecurities, we have to look at where they began, which typically involves going to the past in some way.
Yes. Yes.
So I think that's important to note.
Right. Well, you know, like you said, Mercury retrograde is reviewing something. Why am I revisiting this place? So, you know, Mercury moved into its retrograde shadow on November 25th. So from now until January 1st, we're revisiting everything we experienced in a mental capacity from November 25th to December 13th. So December 13th to January 1st is a review of November 25th to December 13th. So is there something that you are experiencing right now that is rooted in some sort of insecurities that came up between November 25th through the 13th that you need to face? And of course, you know, I understand like what you're alluding to, just like the past in general. Like I always want to encourage anyone who's listening or who I'm working with, any experience that you're having, ask yourself, when was the last time I felt this way? When was the first time I felt this way?
Absolutely. I was just going to say that's a lot of the work that we do in therapy. Is like, where did this pattern originate?
Yes.
Like, where did you learn that? Like, where did you learn to have this insecurity in the first place?
Exactly.
Because you weren't born with insecurities per se. So where did that begin for you?
Yes. Where do they stem from?
Yeah. And it takes, you know, what might be like an unconscious sort of relationship you have with insecurity, and it makes it conscious so that then you can decide how you want to work with that insecurity. You can more actively begin to acknowledge it, accept it, and then integrate it into just part of your experience. But when it remains in the unconscious, it's really kind of running the show behind the scenes. And you don't have, I don't know if control is the right word, but you don't have the same autonomy in being able to relate with the insecurity when it's in your unconscious.
Right. Well, this Aries Sagittarius energy is, it's fire. So it's, if there's something happening in the unconscious, this fire is trying to boil it to the surface.
Mm-hmm. So pay attention to your insecurities, what it is that's being activated, and do your best to be willing to sit with it.
Yes.
To the best of your ability. Knowing that all of this is moving in cycles and waves, and we don't have to get it all done this time around. There's always another chance to work on our stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Always.
Exactly, yes. So I love that you bring up unconscious, because that brings us to the sixth aspect. And really, like this fourth, fifth, and sixth aspects that we're discussing this week are all happening concurrently. The sixth aspect is the sun in Sagittarius squaring, which is a stressful aspect, to Neptune, the god of fresh water in the sea, the planet of illusion, deception, compassion, intuition, transiting through Pisces, the sign of the unconscious. This is occurring from December 14th to the 17th. So it's like Thursday to Sunday. So the fourth transit that we spoke about was the sun in Sagittarius and the north node in Aries, which is Wednesday to Saturday. Mars in Sagittarius aligning with Chiron in Aries from Wednesday to Sunday. And then by the time we get to Thursday, as the sun is still aligning with the north node in Aries, it also starts to make an alignment with Neptune in Pisces. So, and that continues through the end of the week. It is boiling something up in our unconscious so that we can find what is the truth of what's really going on with me? How can I be honest with myself? Am I being honest with myself? How am I speaking to myself?
Yeah, those are all really big questions.
The theme of this Sun in Sagittarius, Neptune in Pisces transit is compassionate honesty. Like, how can I be honest and compassionate with myself? Or with people that are spending time in my mind. You have a dream about somebody, whether it's a daydream or a night dream. Someone shows up in your dreams. Are you being compassionate to them while also honest?
Well, I'm trying to think about the relationship between compassion and honesty. And I guess this would depend on who you are, how, if you're able to make the connection between the two and what your associations with honesty are. I think for some, honesty could be harsh.
Exactly.
I think it's, we talked about this was several weeks ago now, but we talked about these sort of associations we have, even the language that we use that kind of cements these, like the perceptions of different ideas. And there's that expression, like the ugly truth. I think some of this, maybe it's an opportunity to reframe what it means to be honest with someone. You know, if you're someone who has Sagittarius or Aries in a prominent place in your chart, then you probably have a perception that honesty and truth is love. Like, it is just the way that you are.
That is compassion.
That is
compassion.
I'm telling
you the truth.
Yes, that is. that is.
Yeah.
But if you're someone who has, I'm thinking of someone with strong Libra energy, like you associate harmony as the most important quality. And sometimes telling someone the truth is going to potentially bring disharmony before it brings, hopefully, harmony in the long run. So I think, you know, the relationship between those two, between compassion and honesty, is not going to be the same for everybody. And so I see this as an invitation to maybe look at what that is for you.
What do you mean, look at what that is for you?
Look at what that relationship is between compassion and honesty.
Right. So how can you be compassionate and honest?
How can you be both?
Both.
But also, if that's a stretch for you to connect the two, like maybe you don't associate honesty with compassion. It's an invitation to kind of get comfortable with maybe how those two
work together, can
coexist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Love you know, that. Some of us get stuck in sort of, you know, these white lies, which I think can be a shadow side of the Libra energy. You know, oh, I'm protecting that person.
They call it compassionate lying now.
Do they?
Yes. I heard that term over the weekend.
Oh, I've never heard that before.
Lying. It's a compassionate lie.
But I think some of us can get into that space where mm-hmm. we really think that we're protecting the other person. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we all have to reckon with what is true and mm-hmm. what is honest. And the more that we, the closer that we can get there, this transit, it sounds like, is going to help us
yes.
kind of bridge the gap if there is a gap. Mm-hmm.
There is some sort of reconciliation between these two sides, between these two energies, compassion and honesty, that is coming to fruition. This began back in 2012, which was the first time that the sun in Sagittarius aligned with Neptune in Pisces since 1861, 62.
Wow.
So every year since 2012, this is the 12th year in a row that the sun in Sagittarius has aligned with Neptune in Pisces.
Hmm.
It's going to happen two more years after this year. And then it's done for another 160 years or whatever.
Wow.
So hopefully in 2 years, we've reconciled the discordance between compassion and honesty.
Hmm.
And we have found a way to be both.
So in this particular instance, we do have sort of limited time to work with this cycle.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had 12 years.
Yikes.
We got two more.
Okay. So hopefully we're making progress after 12 years.
Yes.
Because we're nearing the tail end of this here.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Okay. And so that leads us to our final transit for the week, which is a transit that we covered last week, which is Mercury now retrograde in Capricorn, forming a trine with Jupiter retrograde in Taurus. We talked about this last week because this was happening between December 6th through the 9th, when Mercury was direct in Capricorn, forming the trine with Jupiter in Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're both retrograde, Jupiter and Mercury, both retrograde. This is an aspect that we're going to be feeling most strongly Saturday, Sunday, and then into next week, all the way Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then it's going to come back a third time in January when both Mercury and Jupiter are direct.
Okay.
So this is the second of three times we're experiencing this transit between the planet of the mind, Mercury, in Capricorn, the sign of authority and achievement, Jupiter, the planetary ruler of Sagittarius, the god of thunder, lord of justice, the planet of luck and expansion, transiting through the fixed earth sign of Taurus. This energy of Jupiter and Taurus is kind of like what you were talking about earlier with the arrow going up and then down and hitting the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jupiter and Taurus is like the arrows hit the ground. It's no longer flying.
Yeah. It's made contact with Earth.
Yes. And it's creating, like, you know, you hear people say the economy's bad, the job market's bad, all these sorts of things. I attribute some of this to Jupiter in Taurus because it's attempting to expand, but it's restricted by the earth, by the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's calling us to do is to really expand within ourselves, our self-worth and our values. And with Mercury in Capricorn, speaking from a place of authority, authority being, I understand myself, and this is what I value. I value living in a house where if I'm living with a man, he's going to put the toilet seat down.
We've come full circle.
Yes. So, yes.
What a powerful week.
Mm-hmm.
Really laying the foundation for a powerful rest of the year.
Yes. So this is about responsible communication through ethical values. Think back what was going on last week, December 6th through the 9th. And this is that first part of the review, that Mercury retrograde review. You're on the street in the neighborhood and you're driving back down that same street again. You were just there last week. Connect the dots between what was going on December 6th through the 9th and what's happening right now from December 17th through the 20th.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
Thanks for that recap.
You're welcome. Should we move on to questions?
Let's move on to questions.
Okay.
Absolutely. So we have some beautiful questions this week. And I'm noticing as I've been on this podcast longer and our beautiful listeners are getting more comfortable with me and getting to know me, that there are questions that are becoming deeper in terms of the psychology piece. And it feels important to me to say, first of all, I'm open to all of those questions, but to give a disclaimer to our listeners to say that the content in this podcast is not a substitute for psychotherapy.
Right.
For being in a one-on-one relationship with a therapist. Mm-hmm. So I just want to be really clear that I am simply reading a question that I received on a screen. I don't know your personal circumstances and the intricacy of your situation. And so I want to be mindful. One of my goals is to be really mindful and thoughtful in anything that I'm expressing on this podcast, because I am a mental health professional. But also, I'm not giving you therapy. This is not therapy. So with that being said, we can move on to questions. Yes. But I always advocate for getting into a one-on-one relationship with a therapist.
Absolutely. Yep. For sure.
Absolutely. Yes. And taking anything that we say on here with a grain of salt, because we're speaking generally, we're speaking from our own perspectives and experiences.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gabriella.
Yes. Thank you. Our first question comes from Shell X Beach. They say, my north node in Taurus is in the 11th house, trine my Capricorn moon in the 6th house. My mother and I are both trafficking survivors, and I have a very difficult time with relationships and hypovigilance. My gratitude for you. Would you like to speak to the astrology piece first, and I can...
Sure. I mean, I'll just say that, you know, if the North Node is in the 11th house in Taurus and is aligning with the Capricorn moon in the 6th house, that would indicate that Shell X Beach is needing to direct their focus, their energy on personal resources, on really focusing on their own self-worth, their values. What is it that I need to feel safe and secure? Really focusing on keeping things practical in the here and now. What are my goals for today? How are those goals for today helping me achieve my goals for this week, this month, this year, my life? So, and who is the, or what is the group or community that is supporting me to my goals? That's because of the moon in Capricorn, sixth house. Moon in Capricorn is goals and achievement. That's what's going to emotionally satisfy Shell X Beach, is achieving goals. The sixth house energy is work and that practicality, and having like sort of lists that are going to assist in navigating Shell X Beach to their goals. The 11th house is the group construct, the community. So Shell X Beach needs to be a part of something greater than themselves. That is a group of people working towards a common cause that is in alignment with the values of Shell X Beach. And that's the Taurus.
Beautiful. Yeah. So I have a resource that I want to share with you, Shell X Beach, but also just to speak to what Scott shared and what you shared is that you have been wounded in relationships through these experiences that your mother and you had as trafficking survivors. And what I'm hearing from Scott is that there's an opportunity for you also to experience healing in relationships, specifically in community. And so I wonder if you have either a support group or a supportive community of folks who have been also injured in the same way that you've been injured. Mm. And perhaps that's an area of support for you.
Yes.
Again, not to say that you couldn't also benefit from working one-on-one with someone who could help you really learning how to feel safe in relationships. Mm-hmm. Sounds like an important part of this work. Mm. But just to highlight the community piece, and you know, in the therapy world, you have, of course, one-on-one therapy. But also group therapy can be incredibly healing, mm-hmm. especially when you're feeling misunderstood in other relationships. You have an opportunity to get in a group with people who've experienced similar traumas or similar types of loss to you. Mm-hmm. Like I'm thinking of a grief group, for example. Mm-hmm. And you really have an opportunity to be seen and heard in a way that honors the wound. In a really important way. The specific resource that came to mind for me to share with you is based on a man named Sean Fargo, who has a really beautiful newsletter. He also has a podcast. His website is called mindfulnessexercises.com. Mm-hmm. And he's a meditation teacher. He is a former Buddhist monk who felt so strongly about everything he was experiencing that he knew he was meant to bring the teachings back into society. And I read in his newsletter last week, he was educating about the window of tolerance. And I'm bringing this in specifically for you, Shell X Beach, because he speaks to this hyper and hypovigilance that you're experiencing. And the window of tolerance, if you're not familiar, it's a term that was coined by Dan Siegel. And so you could look him up too for some more resources about his writing. But Sean Fargo, what he's done in this particular article is he's connecting how meditation can help support you in finding your window of tolerance. And basically, your window of tolerance is that space where it feels safe enough for you to experience stress and discomfort that's tolerable. Hmm. So when you've had a traumatic experience, it's easier to find yourself outside of that window of tolerance. And when you're on a healing journey to heal from trauma, it's important to recognize when you are feeling safe enough to be able to tap into some of that discomfort without becoming dysregulated. Hmm. So he explains that on either side of the window of tolerance, you have a zone of either hyperarousal or hypoarousal. And Shell X Beach, I'm sure that you're familiar with what those mean, but I'll recap here. When you're in a state of hyperarousal, that's when you experience that fight or flight. You want to run away. You want to get away from those feelings. So oftentimes, those feelings can accompany anxiety and overwhelm on both a physical and emotional level. On the other side of it, you have hypoarousal, which is when you want to shut down. Hmm. That's that freeze state where you might feel spaced out, exhausted, or numb. So both extremes, when you find yourself in hyper or hypoarousal, are putting you in a place where it's hard to heal. Mm-hmm. So healing happens within that window of tolerance.
Wow.
So it's really powerful the way Sean Fargo describes how meditation can help you, first of all, identify your window of tolerance, because sometimes we go into hyper or hypo arousal and we don't even know how we got there. So meditation, mindfulness in general, is helping you really tune into yourself and identify when you're out of that window. And when you are out of that window, how to bring yourself back into the window of tolerance.
So it sounds like some of these relationships that you're having are bringing you out to a place that doesn't feel safe. And it's really important to understand what your boundaries are around what feels safe and what doesn't feel safe.
And that's the Taurus North Node right there.
And that's the boundaries. Taurus North Node. You're learning how to contain yourself within that window of tolerance.
I would also say that just astrologically speaking, you know, because the bull likes a lot of space. And so the North Node in Taurus in the 11th house is also about being able to create healthy boundaries within the group construct. So you're not getting involved in other people's crises, and you're keeping yourself in a safe sort of position within the community where you feel secure.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. And learning how to be in that space of containment or being in that window of tolerance is ultimately what helps you expand the window of tolerance.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I would recommend is, you know, if meditation or mindfulness is interesting to you, this could be a path of exploration, that it could be really valuable to be doing this with a professional who could maybe help you identify these feelings and kind of where they are on the spectrum of tolerance. So sometimes we can do this on our own, and you'll know, of course, better than we will of where you are on this journey and what level of support you need. But really, the more you can identify where you are, what's coming up for you, you can direct and guide yourself back to the window of tolerance, back to that feeling of safety and boundaries and containment.
Is there a link that we can put in the show notes for this information?
Yes.
For Shell X Beach? So we'll do that for you, Shell X Beach. We'll have a link in the show notes to retrieve the information that Gabrielle is discussing here.
Yes. We'll post a link to this article, and then you could also look at Sean Fargo's other resources. He has a podcast too, but he's also just a beautiful writer and shares so much free information in his newsletter. So anyone who's resonating with this,
Awesome. Thank you, Gabriella.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Weekly Transit. If you're curious to learn how these transits or any others may be affecting you, or if you're interested in learning more about your astrological code, contact me for a reading at theweeklytransit.com. If you're interested in delving into the world of psychotherapy with Gabriella, you can connect with her at innervisionpsychotherapy.com. Wishing you all the best as you ride the planetary waves.